Good morning, and welcome to session 113, which is it's a dual paper session, What LDS Hymns Really Say to, For, and About Us. I'm so excited to chair this session. Probably my...
Speak up a little.
Okay, now this is what they told me. You have to... Well, I'm just take this off.
That's the thing underneath. That's the neck.
What? This?
The silver part. Oh, well.
I got it. That's what they said. You got to speak straight into this and have it about an inch from your face. So if we have a Q&A at the end, in addition to our sing-along, anybody who speaks needs to use the microphone and hold it up to them like this. Anyway, I was saying I'm very excited to chair this session. Probably my favorite church position that I ever had was being the sacramental meeting chorister, where I got to choose all the music. And there were times when I rejected a song because it was so male in its pronouns. So I'm really happy to chair this session. Our speakers today are Charlene Durham, and I left my glasses down there, so I'll do the best I can. Oh, actually, this one's got big print. Charlene Durham has been an educator since serving simultaneously as president of Future Teachers of America and primary teacher while still in high school. She has served in church callings, public schools, and private industries, and now works with the Department of Veterans Affairs. Alan Eastman uses both sides of his brain. He's a chemist by day and a musician by night. Raised in Salt Lake with a PhD in chemistry from the University of Utah, he worked as a research chemist for Phillips 66, then retired and is now chief technical officer for a startup geothermal energy company, Green Fire Energy. He has been the pianist at Sunstone for R.D. Watts and now for Kim McCall for the last 6 years, and he plays in the swing band as well. He has served as the ward organist in every ward he's ever lived in, except for his current ward, but being state music chairman probably makes up for it. He is married to the love of his life, Vicki, with whom he is delighted to share leading this session. Vicki Eastman has a BA in English from Stanford University. She is a frequent participant on Sunstone panels dealing with Mormon culture, a retired freelance executive recruiter, and if I were in her ward, I'd probably go to church because she's a gospel doctor teacher in the ward. Although I didn't ask Vicki for permission to say this, I think it's safe to say that she's married to the love of her life, Alan. So we welcome our panelists. I need to remind you to turn off cell phones or other noisemakers if you have them. And if anything goes off during this session, I'm going to turn you over to Lavina Fielding Anderson and ask her to show no mercy. So with that, we welcome Charlene for her presentation.
Well, I appreciate that. I have a teacher voice, maybe it's not. But I really just, not only do I dislike male exclusive pronouns, but I also don't like podiums because it puts me too far away from wherever we are. So if you don't mind, I'm going to walk around all over the place. I can't stand still either. So thank you very much for the introduction. And thank you all for coming so early in the morning. And I'm excited and trepidatious about presenting this presentation. As was mentioned in the program, but not here this morning, I am a quiet feminist, that when I change the words as I sing, I do it sort of under my breath, and so that, you know, it's not my intent to disrupt and change all kinds of things, it's just what it is that I am singing myself. So,
see how much
technology I can put together here this morning. My premise in putting this together is, you know, why do I do it and what's going on? And what I want to say is that words matter. As we talk about ourselves, they identify who we are, they identify what we think, they formulate who I think I am. So it matters what kinds of words we use. As we talked about, whether it's degendering or demilitarizing or you know, coloring things, whatever it is, whether it's just technical language or whether it's flowery creative language, it colors what we think and helps to form what we think. So I think words matter, what kinds of words that we use. And also tunes matter. So the kinds of music that is selected matters in terms of the kinds of attitudes that it brings about it to us, whether we're worshipful, whether we're patriotic, whether we're marching along, what those tunes matter as well. The hymns are the only real participatory part of our worship service. Usually we come, just like you are right here, to sit and to listen and to just be there. Well, when we sing, that's when everybody participates, or when you have the opportunity or the expectation. So if you are participating, my question is then, you know, what does that have to do with our worship? We all know the background that Emma Smith was instructed to put together a collection of hymns in 1835. So where did she get those hymns? Where did they come from? Most of them came out of her Methodist background. So that we start with, in our Mormon hymn book, that Protestant background. A lot of that Methodist Protestant hymns. And the kinds of hymns that she got were our strong beats, I can't say militant, but martial kinds of enthusiastic sounds in those early Protestant hymns. There were also some original hymns, primarily penned by W.W. Phelps or by Harley Pratt. So we got some specific LDS doctrine as well. But there were, through the years since that, several different collections. When the missionaries went to England, they put together a group of hymns that were the English hymn book. And other languages have also other collections that were used in their churches as well. So they went through several collections, different languages, different versions. So I grew up with the collection that was put together in 1948. And then when the church music committee was commissioned in the late 1970s to revise that hymn book and put together another one, I wait, these are all the hymns I love. What am I going to do? They're going to change everything. Well, it was an interesting process to see what came out of that. So I looked at now these hymns in those two hymn books, primarily the one that we've been using since 1985, to look at all of those hymns. There are also a number of versions of children's songbooks that have gone through. I intended for this session to look at the children's songbooks as well, because what are the children learning as they go through, just initially, the kinds of songs that they sing? How do they learn the gospel? I didn't have time for that, so I just looked at the adult songbooks. So, focusing primarily on that 1985 edition. So my first question, as I read the hymns, if this is the only participation that the general audience has in the worship service, are the hymns doctrine? So by raise of hands, tell me, are the hymns doctrine? Are they maybe doctrine, maybe not?
What do we mean by doctrine? They've been vetted for valid doctrine.
Okay, they've been vetted, but are they doctrine? If I were a missionary, and I went out to teach the gospel, and all I had was this 1985 hymn book, would I be teaching doctrine? I know it's not sufficient to give everything, but is everything in there really doctrine? There's a difference of opinion. It's sort of, in my head, there was that difference of opinion, too. So, what do I do? Yeah.
Well, it may be doctrine, but maybe not considered official, approved doctrine.
Well, I'm getting fuzzy.
I know, it's a technicality.
Technicality. So, what I did was look at, and wonderfully in this 1985 edition, the music committee put in a lot of information. There's a lot to learn from that, and so on page one, actually before page one, there's a preface from the First Presidency about what this hymn book is for. And it reads, inspiration part, not all of it, Inspirational music is an essential part of church meetings. It helps invite the Spirit of the Lord, create a feeling of reverence, unify us as a member, and provide a way for us to offer praises to the Lord. Does anyone in there say this is doctrine? So, vetted by the First Presidency, approved by the councils to be sung in our meeting, but does it say it's doctrine? It invites the Spirit, it helps us praise the Lord, but it doesn't say this is doctrine. That was sort of comforting to me, that it's possible to be a little critical about what we think about it and how we function. So if I am participating in worship, and this is what I do, my thought as I went through all of this is, if I'm voicing the words, do I agree with what I'm saying? If I'm going to say this, do I agree with it? Well, sometimes I didn't. And so if I didn't, it was up to me to change the words. And that's where I would sing under my breath in changing the words just a little bit. And so that when, if this is what I'm praising the Lord with, I want it to be my words. I want it to be what I really feel. And I took license in doing that. I also thought, as I came to this over a long period of time, this isn't the way I was born and learned early on, but in singing some of these songs, are we leaving people out, whether intentionally or unintentionally? And how do I figure that out? As a quiet feminist and singing under my breath, I was in a Relief Society meeting one day, and there was a young woman who had just moved into the ward, who's a widow, and struggling, of course, trying to make her way and with her way her life had changed. And she was sitting next to me while we sang, Because I Have Been Given Much, which is one of those that sort of, makes me jerk anyway. And so under my breath, I will share my gifts from me with every other that I see. And as I go along, just kind of quietly under my breath, saying that, she looked at me frankly and she said, "Are you changing the words?" caught. Yes, I am. And she says, "Oh, good. I wondered if I could stay in this ward, and if you're doing that, I can." That was encouraging. I still sing it under my breath. I'm not real loud about it. Another part of that, and thinking about leaving people out or what really we're saying, I went to the Tabernacle Choir broadcast this last weekend, which I haven't often. But does anybody know the very first song that they sing at the opening of the broadcast?
Gently raise the sacred
string. For the Sabbaths come again, that man may rest, and I add, and a woman may make a big dinner so that the whole family can come home. Who are we leaving out of that? And not only that man may rest, but twice that man may rest, and a woman may make a big dinner so that the family can come home. That's sort of what, when I finish that line. Another one that comes up is Faith of Our Fathers. And very often, last night at our convocation, our session, plenary session, what song did we sing? Carry On. And what's the second line? Carry On. On the rock our fathers planted. Our fathers? Are they the only ones? What about her mothers, weren't they there? What about the uncles and aunts who didn't have any children? What about all the children who came along besides? It feels to me like we're leaving things out. Besides that, when we talk about faith of our fathers, my father happens to be a convert to the LDS Church. And so the faith that I grew up with is not the faith of my father, it's the faith of my mother. But I don't ever hear a song about the faith of my mother, but that's the one that I follow, and I'm all confused. So I just sort of feel like I need to get another word in there. Now, one sister last night, as we talked this all over, and I have differences of opinion, not only from, my congregation, which is why I don't talk too loud when I sing, but from my own family, she said, "You're just being too literal." And I thought, yeah, and I don't like to be literal. But, again, back to words matter. It matters in terms of how I interpret who I am and what it is I'm really saying. So in this case, I really do take that. Oh, last point there. As I get continually more and more discomfort in church recently and not able to really sing wholeheartedly in that worship time, it discouraged me. And so that's really why I kind of decided to do this. Let's do some little research about what's really going on. And I realized that what's going on is the chorister in my ward loves those really strong kinds of songs with the beat and the energy and the male pronouns. That just happens to be the one she likes. So it really isn't, it's uncomfortable for me, so I wanted to find out. So what I did then is went again back to the hymn book and did some data gathering. So this is going to be a little, intense here for just a bit. Again, at the front of the hymn book, the music committee has divided those hymns into several different sections. So they're sort of, they're not just kind of thrown all together. They do have a certain section. So the restoration hymns come first, and those are the ones that my chorister loves to, sing and bring out. Well, those, you might think, are specifically about the LDS Church and the restoration of the gospel. Then there's praise and thanksgiving and prayer and supplication. And those are the ones I love because to me those are worshipful. Those are praise songs. And I want to hear some praise songs more often. So it was really wonderful to help me in this data gathering that the church, that the music committee has made these categories. Then there are sacrament hymns and Easter hymns. And Christmas, I noticed Easter. There's only 4 hymns. No wonder we only celebrate Easter for 1 week, because there's not anything more to sing. You can't do it for 6 weeks with only 4 hymns. And Christmas at least gets 14, so that's enough to spread out for 4 or 6 weeks. But that sort of, has also been another thing that had disturbed me in the hymn book. How come we can't celebrate Easter? Well, because we only have 4 songs to sing. Then there are Kim's done this whole talk already. Sorry, I've done this research. Special topics is kind of all the rest of the stuff that's kind of what we wanted in there, but we didn't know how to category to put it. So that's a lengthy section. Children's songs are new to this hymn book. I know that the church at that time wanted children to attend sacrament meetings, so they wanted something that the children would be familiar with. There are only 10 songs there, but they are significant. Then there's a whole section for women. I don't like that it says for women. It's for women's voices, but it's not specifically for women. And then the section for men, I add things, for men's voices. And then the patriotic hymns. So it was nice that those were separated. So as I did the data, I separated them into those sections. And what I did was read the text on every single one of those hymns and pick out, was there gender-specific text, and just looking at the text, in any of those. I looked at whether that song was written by an LDS person or a non-LDS person. Was it in the original hymn book that Emma put together? And was it new to this hymn book as opposed to the one that was written in 1948? So those are kind of my data points that I started with. And there, numbers. In the restoration hymns, there are 61 hymns. 29 of them do have gender-specific text. So 47.5%, almost half of them in that first section, the one that my Ward Forrester loves to choose from. No wonder I was feeling a little hammered. Half of the ones she chooses are gender-specific. Praise and thanksgiving, only 28% of them have gender-specific text. And the prayer and supplication, only less than 14%. So that really did make a significant difference where you're choosing those hymns from. I'm going to use this data as sort of the foundation as I go through, and it will be duplicated on later slides. Kim?
Just a tiny question. When God is referred to as he, that does or doesn't count?
That does not count. And you're, thank you. I intended to say that.
For the table.
The question was, let me type that, how I did the data. When I looked through the text, if it referred to God as he, or Jesus as he, or Joseph Smith, a particular person, I did not count that as gender-specific text. If it were a collective pronoun, then I would. So if it were fathers, or if it were he, or brothers, or sons of God, things
or
like
man.
That. Pardon me?
Or man.
Or man, yes. Man as a generic also was included, which is why Easter songs are, you know, that man may live. Those things, God in there. But God as male, I did not count. Also, Zion is often referred to as she. And that one, I didn't include either. So, thank you very much. The special topics, again, it's about a little over a quarter of those have the gender-specific pronouns. Children's songs, only one. So at least from what's in the hymn book, that was very encouraging to me. I didn't look at the children's song, the primary song book, so I don't know specifically. When I got to the sections on for men's voices, for women's voices, and patriotic songs, I found those so tilted one way or the other. I decided I'm just going to throw those in out of the data. I'm not even going to examine them. And very often they are duplicates of other hymns anyway, just with a different key. So I thought, all right, who's writing these gender-specific pronouns? Are they LDS authors or non-LDS authors? Because there's a lot of them who are non-LDS authors. The first column shows how many of those songs are by LDS authors or not. So, this one just is how many LDS authors. So the first one, of the restoration that we think is particularly about the restoration of the church, 82% of them are LDS, but still 18% are not. So we've got a lot of restoration hymns that are not written by LDS authors. So you get a lot of mostly John Wesley, Isaac Watts. So those just, you know, prior to the restoration of this church. Martin Luther, there's some. So those kinds of hymns are what I'm talking about. So praise and thanksgiving, only a little over a quarter of them are written by LDS authors. So the ones that I'm excited about, praise and thanksgiving and prayer and supplication, less than half of them are written by LDS authors. And that sort of was a shock to me, but, you know, that's what David's about. Gotta find out what's happening. Sacrament songs, most of them are written by LDS authors. We do have a particular intent when we worship through the sacrament. And it is different than a number of other denominations. So it would be expected that those are mostly LDS authors. Easter songs, there's only half of them. Half of those big four are written by LDS authors and the others who are not. Christmas songs, only two of the 14 are specifically LDS hymns. So those are some kind of telling data. Special topics, 59%, a little less than two-thirds. And children's songs, most of them are specifically LDS authors. So what we are teaching the children early on is very much specifically the LDS slant. So of those, how many have gender-specific topics? Let's see. No, this is just the LDS versus the non-LDS. The numbers down at the bottom, you'll see there's 308. So again, I've left off those last two sections of the handbook. Now, of those that are written, are the LDS authors different in writing that gender-specific text than the non-LDS authors? Again, this is from the front page. So it's the same, so we can compare. So the LDS in the restoration hymns, 47% to 46%, they're pretty equal. It doesn't really matter whether you're LDS or non-LDS, you kind of look at it the same way. Praise and thanksgiving, and those are about the same too. LDS, non-LDS, prayer, and supplication. So these are very much the same, whether you're looking at LDS authors or non-LDS authors. So the next thought is, what about women authors then? Do they view it differently than men? First of all, how many women authors are there in the hymn book? And there are, out of the 57 hymns of the Restoration, now here there are sometimes you can't tell the gender of the author, whether it's just initials, A.J. Anderson, I don't know whether that's male or female, or whether it's an anonymous author, then we don't know either. So that's why now the numbers may not add up and we get a little bit diminished. But there are very few women who are writing in that Restoration section with the strong, dominant, two-thirds of them having the male text. I thought that was significant. If we get more women authors with the sacrament, and within the children's songs, 90% of them, well, 9 out of 10. So here, you know, you kind of have to look at not only the percentages, but how big is the sample that I've got to look at. So I'm looking at Easter songs, and 25% are written by women. That sounds good, except that there's only one song. there's not a lot of women, but there are significantly more in the new 1985 hymn book than there were in the 48 hymn book. So even though the numbers look slim, they look a lot better than they did 50 years ago. So of those women, how many are writing with gender-specific text? And again, this, the center columns, that's the generic data. Of all of the songs in the songbook, this is how many are gender-specific. How did the women change? What was significant to me, praise and thanksgiving, none of them, women, had gender-specific texts. If they are praising the Lord, most of them, or they're all about everybody. And what is significant here, and I find this also in most hymn books of other denominations, if you're talking about praise, it's a very personal relationship with God. Most of the pronouns are I, we. What is my relationship with God? It's very, very personal, as opposed to the whole about the world. So that first person pronoun as opposed to the third person, talking about mankind or about everybody. Those are the ones you're going to get male-specific or gender-specific pronouns. But the prayer and the praise sections are very much personal kinds of worship, kinds of words there. Sacrament hymns, the women, that the same amount. And what I noticed with these sacrament hymns, and I'll get to this a little bit later on, most of those that have male gender-specific terms are written by Eliza Snow. So she had a really strong influence on the way that we phrase the kinds of philosophy we have. And I know that she's pointed to very strongly in terms of, well, she said that we have a mother in heaven, so that must be a doctrine. Well, if she's using all these male-specific gender pronouns, how much does that also affect what we are learning in our doctrine? Christmas songs, no women. Of course, women aren't writing them, so it doesn't really matter. They are similar, but a little bit less specifically in those two categories. Female authors that have gender-specific texts, do the LDS authors write differently than the non-LDS authors? And this one I didn't even bother with percentages because the numbers are so small. So 1 out of 3 in the Restoration songs for the LDS authors. The non-LDS authors are more strongly, of course, large sample size, write gender-specific. So the sacrament hymns, again, those are written by Eliza Snow, and we don't have many that are non-LDS authors anyway, so it really doesn't count. So looking at specifically the Restoration hymns, praise and thanksgiving, prayer and supplication, and the special topics, those are the ones that kind of are things that we can choose from. So now there are now down to 17 hymns written by women, LDS and non-LDS authors. Let's look at what are those songs then, and what are the things that people are saying? Because now we've got this enough, we can sort of narrow it down. Of those 17 hymns, what are they? On the left-hand side are the ones written by LDS authors. On the right-hand side are the ones written by non-LDS authors. In parentheses, you'll see new. That's something that's added to the 1985 hymn book.
Specifically, I was interested that the battle hymn of the Republic was not in the hymn book until 1985, written by a non-LDS author. So it sort of, that was, why is that here? I'm not quite sure. One that I grew up with, Did You Think to Pray? And again, the phrase in this is something about my brother,
Did you plead for grace?
When you were filled with anger, did you plead for grace, my brother, that you might forgive another who had crossed your way? So that kind of text. So, but again, I grew up with this and kind of thinking about it, and it was there in my subconscious, but I wondered, who am I leaving out of this song? The sacrament hymns, you see those two that were written by Eliza Snow. Special topics, and here's one that I was very pleased with. Because I have been given much, which is sung at least once a month, if not twice a month, is not written by an LDS author. I didn't have to really feel, attached to this one, because to me it is one of the most egregious, as I wrote in the summary, the abstract for this session. And that's the one that Michelle caught me on. Lord, I would follow thee is right next to that one, written by an LDS author, but it does have the gender-specific text. And again, it's new to this hymn book. Onward Christian Soldiers, written by a woman, but was not in the hymn book until his latest one. So you're going to see where those hymns are coming from. It is changing somewhat, but fading slowly. The one in the children's section that does have male-specific text is "Love One Another," as I have loved you, love one another. And the last line, that by this shall men know ye are my disciples. So that was, I love that song. I love listening to the words of Jesus. But it, following with the data and the kinds of ways that I approach it.
That is a quote straight out of the Bible.
Okay, so now we get to, what are the issues of changing text? If I change the words, what am I going to run into? And the first one is, what if it is biblical text? You'll find this in the Christmas songs, too. Because the angel comes and the angel says,
goodwill toward men.
Well, I do change the Christmas hymn, and it is goodwill toward all. And so what about changing biblical text? As I thought about this, languages have different ways of using gender. And sometimes languages have different pronouns or different words for male and female. And in that case, they may mean male and female. Well, while I was in elementary school, and I learned in my English class, if you don't know or if it's a collective, then you use the male pronoun. Okay, I'm an obedient child, I'll do that. And then I grew up and I thought, why? Or, is it really necessary? And then, looking at biblical text, the languages that was written in originally, did those languages have male and female pronouns, or did they only have one pronoun for all people? I don't know. I'm not a big biblical scholar, so I can't answer that question for these texts that use that gender-specific language. But I have to think about that one. Did they not have that word, and then when it got translated into English, English did have it, so you had to pick one or the other. So I don't know, when the Bible says goodwill toward men, did the angel mean men, or did the angel mean people? Or did the angel say something else? And even so, is it intended just to be men? Sometimes it is, sometimes maybe it isn't. I don't know. So since I don't know, that's a part of my own personal testimony and my relationship that I have to figure out. The original author's words. Some of these texts were written 200 years ago. Should we change their words? Well, the music committee thought it was okay to change the words, and they did on several hymns. How firm a foundation, they changed. What's the end of that one? That's the yoo-hoo. Yoo-hoo unto Jesus. And so kids go, yoo-hoo. So the church changed that one. The music committee changed it. Who unto the Savior. So they decided it's okay to change some words. So, and how great they are. Wonderful hymn, new to this hymn book, not written by an LDS author, but we all love it and appreciate it. They didn't mind changing the words. Didn't have anything to do with gender specific. It had something to do with something else. So, yeah, maybe it is okay to change somebody's words, even though they wrote it 200 years ago. What about the beat and the syllables in the song? Not always do those words interchange. Sometimes it does. So when I sing, I will share my gift from thee with every brother that I see. I've got to find something that has two syllables in there. When I talk about fathers, I can add faith of my fathers. I can add faith of my ancestors. That's a little bit too long. So looking at the kinds of words that will go in there. So think what words might we change. Share my gifts from thee with every other.
Person.
And by the way, person, Carol Quist and I were, she corresponding on this earlier, and she saw something that No Man is an Island that was posted up at Salt Lake Community College, and so they changed that to No Man is an Island, No Woman is an Island, No Person is an Island, No Per Daughter is an Island. So, I don't know how far you are from this. But I heard a really wonderful one from Levina Anderson just recently. I will share my gifts from thee with every neighbor that I see. Don't we talk a lot about neighbors? Isn't neighbor an easy word to put in there? So, neighbor, saint, child, servant. There's a lot of them used in other hymns that we can kind of add into there. The rice food. Did you think to pray? So those are the kinds of issues that you have to address when you're thinking about champagne words. Tunes matter. I'm going to just skip through this one really quickly, but we'll get to it. So when people sing, we've noticed that, or it has been said by a number of people, all the songs sound the same when we're singing in the LDS Church, whether they're quiet, prayerful songs, or whether they're sacrament songs, or whether they're strong songs, they all sound the same. Well, we need to kind of think about this and use our music appropriately. Those good strong beats are usually the ones that the men get excited about. They're also a lot of the youth songs, the ones that I learned in the youth hymn book when I was a kid. So those kind of get people's hearts beating. The flowing melody, those nice, soft, flowy songs, are we, as was mentioned last night, feminizing men? And singing these nice, sweet little songs, because there's a lot more of those, I think, in this. I thought there were a lot more of those in this new hymn book. But there's also a lot of very martial ones. So, I think the committee, the music committee that put together this hymn book, took upon themselves a very strong, very difficult task, laid out some strong principles at the beginning. They looked at, do I want songs that are familiar to people? We want to keep those in. Making songs that people enjoy singing, something that has an appropriate text. They put specifically as part of their charge to limit the number of militant songs. And yet I found in this 1985 book an awful lot of militant songs that were still there. In the 1985 book, in the topical index, it actually says militant as one of the topics. That sort of, struck my heart just a little bit difficultly. And there are still not only a lot of those in the hymn book now, 1985, but added some more, like Onward Christian Soldiers and Battle Hymn of the Republic. Those have been added in, besides what was there before. So what principles would you use? And my time is up, so I'll let you peruse or ask questions or whatever, we'll let sing on. Yes?
There are actually two good histories of hymns in the church. There are actually a couple good histories of hymns in the church. One written by Michael Hicks on the history of LDS hymns, and I recently reviewed one that was just written by a guy from the Community of Christ about their hymnology. And in both of those, they say that the hymns both lead and follow the theology of the churches. There are things in the hymn books that will show up as theology, and there are things in theology that will eventually show up in the hymn books. When you're talking about writing hymn books, one influence that you didn't mention is that I know for sure happened with the 85 hymn book, is that there were some hymns the music committee wanted to take out, but particularly general authorities said, oh, that's my favorite, you can't take that out. And many of those turned out to be those old militant camp meeting hymns, which may account for why there are so many of those in there.
That is true. Now, I think it was 1948 to 1985, so 40 years to get that new hymnal, and actually 30 years before they were charged to begin writing it. Is it time for us to start thinking about a different hymnal?
According to the church music committee, they are not even thinking about it now.
Not even.
I branched out from changing gender to changing doctrine. There's one hymn that I do that, and it's If You Can Hike a Co-Love, and it says there is no end to race. In every hymnal that I come across in our chapel, I get out my little pen and write a G in front of race, turn it into grace. I'm a subversive doctrine changer.
Is that okay if we start singing?
Yeah, then it's
good. Oh, yes.
Maybe.
Thank you all.
I love it. Thank you. I just have a couple comments. The committee that did the 1985 hymn book was aware of gender issues. And I don't think that all of the people who are on it got to have their way about some changes. But one of the notable changes was Call to Serve, where it used to be Sons of God and Children of the King, and now Sons and Daughters, Children of the King. So I don't know if you're aware of that change.
But I didn't. I noticed it when I was reading it, but I didn't know that that's why.
Yeah, that was a change. And about the scriptural text, As I Have Loved You, if you read that verse in the Bible, you will see that it says, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples. But the word men is in italics. That is not in the Greek. So when I was charged with putting together a group of women to sing that, we say, by this shall all know that you are my disciples.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nadine, could you help me with something here really quick? All right, everybody. We have got some rewritten hymn texts here by three different authors. And actually, the one I think we'll start out with, Believe, on the top was written yesterday morning by Mr. Alan Eastman here in a fit of I don't know what. You want to tell them what it was you were thinking?
Well, I was reading Paul and Believe's text, and I thought, I can do that. So, and part of one came to mind, so I just sat and wrote it down.
Okay, this is to the hymn, the tune of, Today While the Sun Shines, okay? And it continues on the back of the page, so we'll have to flip over. I'm going to put down the microphone, because I can't sing above the sea anymore, but let's just dive into this and see what we think.
Thank you.
Next, let's look at this wonderful text by Mamie Hansen, who follows the prophet who. Mamie, do you want to say anything about what prompted you to write this one?
It was right after a general conference when President Hinckley talked about not getting tattoos and about body piercings, yes. He specifically said that the minor ear piercing for earrings was okay if you just had one.
See, I'm Orthodox right here.
Yeah, me too.
But my daughter is unorthodox. Okay, let's do this one. It's to who's on the Lord's side who? We are going to be singing two of Paul's Music of the Broken Words ones. So they were the ones that we wanted, but we decided to let the plenary session have them. And the two we're singing tonight are My How the Women Are Raging, my all-time favorite of his. And what's the other one? Let's all press on, something like that. So anyway, we have got this one of Paul's. Let us all be faith promoting. Song two, what is it? Yeah, you'll recognize it too.
Again, we meet
among the board.
they should never leave me bored in church.
She scribbles.
Because the muse just strikes me and composes these in my mind when I'm sitting there bored.
It's amazing how many of these hymns are sort of about the vanilla flavor of the church. So let's do this one. Again, we meet among the board.
Is that many people think, scholars of the Bible, think that if you want to understand what early Christians were actually believing, you would like to have their hymns, okay? Because their hymns didn't go through a correlation committee. They were things that people sang, like we just sang. And if you, I should have looked this up, but in Philippians, there's a whole passage about Jesus not thinking it beneath him to take on the aspect of man and to become one of us and that sort of thing. People believe this is the earliest known Christian hymn, that it's actually a text. Also, the Paul's Ode to Love in 1 Corinthians 13 or 14, whatever it is, also may have been a hymn. And so we actually have a sense of how early Christians believed about Christ by looking at their earliest hymns, which actually probably have been preserved in those couple of cases. And I looked up what Nadine says, and she's absolutely right. It says, by this shall all know that you're my disciples. Panto, so the pantheon, the word for all. I kind of looked up a few others, so what did the angels say? Right,
I think that since we all have grown up writing ourselves into Scripture, I don't think that there's any problem writing ourselves into hymns as well. I've had some experience, I sing a lot of choirs, but I've also had some experience singing hymns out of hymn books that were written in 1985, but actually were prepared in 1985. So they have inclusive language. And I can say that my worship experience is so much different when I'm not in my mind singing women or singing men. And just to see, instead of singing all Christians, good Christian men rejoice, to sing all Christians now rejoice. And to hear these just in a new way, it just brightens my life. And I'm really hoping that the next time we do our hymn book, it won't take 40 years, and that we could actually have some women included, not just by including them as authors, but including us in the text as well.
I hope so too. Does anybody else have any comments? any of our people. Okay, well, I guess we're done then. Thank you all for coming.